Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to another makeup tutorial with me, Richard Herring, showing you how I achieved this wonderful look. You have to do this with your chin, basically, and then just stretch it and everything's okay. Welcome to Rahulastapa, that's what it really is. I was doing an hilarious joke, and this week it's with Ahir Shah, fantastic comic. He's been on one of the Edinburgh shows before. If you haven't heard of him yet, you will do very soon. And if you haven't heard of him, don't say it in the comments. You just look like an idiot. Because these are good people. You should, if you're a comedy fan, you should know who these people are. You go, who's that? You look like a fool. That's why everyone's just looking at your comic going, who's this fool? You're a fool. So don't have people thinking that, because that's what they're thinking about you. It's a really good podcast. You're going to love it. If you do like these podcasts, why not go to gofasterstroke.com/badges, become a monthly badger, help us make even more. We've got big plans for doing an audio sitcom, which we may happen this year or next year if we can raise the funds and I can write it. So any money you give to us will go to make more podcasts, including Rahulastapa and whatever else we can do. So it's, you also get loads of extras like downloads of my stand-up shows and backstage videos and other little extras in there, and an email telling you who the guests are going to be in advance, membership pack with a badge and a secret code and loads of emergency questions. It's good. And we'll probably start sending out some other little extras as well, because you guys have been fantastic. So thanks for the support if you are supporting us. If you're not supporting us, if you can't afford to support us, if you just don't want to, a great way to support us is to tell your friends about the podcast. If you think they will enjoy it, if they listen, then that can help us as well. So just spread the word. If you don't think it's any monetary value to you, really, do you think it's not even worth you expending the breath to say, listen to Rahulastapa to one of your friends? Is that true? My God, you want a lot from me. What's wrong? Do you want blood? I can cut myself here now if you want. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahulastapa with Ahir Shah.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, is this working? This microphone isn't working. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Winchester Theatre Royal. Please welcome a man who first appeared on this stage in 1988, before his guest was born, I think. Yep, just had that confirmed. It's Richard Herring! Oh, Peter. Lovely to be back. Lovely to be back in this fantastic venue. We might talk about that more later. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leper Saving Time podcast. New direction for the podcast. You've got to kind of come up with something new. There's so many podcasts now. So what I decided to do, I'm going to try and cure all leprosy in the world. I'm doing a bit like what Jesus did, except he only did 10 lepers. I'm going to try and do all of them. I've got the power to cure leprosy. Why just cure 10 lepers? That seems rude, doesn't it? I don't like the others. Fuck them. That was Jesus' attitude. That's not my attitude. I'm going to cure even the nasty ones. I'm going to cure the nasty lepers. Is this still a problem? I don't know. But I was hanging out in Winchester Pizza Express early in there. Kevin from Eggheads was sat at the next table. He's in tonight. He was reading a book of facts while eating alone. But, you know, at least he wasn't pushing anyone in a canal, so let's not knock him. I was sitting alone reading a good book of questions as well. So, you know, we should have got together with our questions and our answers. He called it Rehellastabus. I don't know if I've done one of the eggheads there. That's not quite true, but about 10, 15 years ago when I was in Winchester, I did sit in a Pizza Express near to Kevin from Eggheads, who had a big book of facts that he was reading while he ate pizza. I mean, what better way to live? It's beautiful to be in game. I did the Oxford Review here in 1988. It's a sold out night tonight. We were sold out in 1988. We can't get any better than that. It's just constant 100% Winchester. Love me. So it's lovely to be back here. Some facts about Winchester. It has a fuck off massive cathedral. That is the main thing. It's a massive cathedral. Winchester killed Jane Austen. That's little known fact about it. She was fine until she came here, then bang, 2 weeks later she was dead. They got the round table, King Arthur's round tables here on a wall. That's not how tables work. I was coming here, I was really looking forward to visiting the badger farm, and I would tell you I was very disappointed when I got there. Badger in sight. Lucy Pinder is from Winchester, the topless large-breasted model Lucy Pinder comes from Winchester. And to be honest, for that, that's enough. Well done, everyone, for that. She's kind of the opposite of Kevin from Eggheads. I kind of hope they'll get married one day. That would be wonderful. You've got a few kings buried here. King William II, King the Rufus. Yeah, he's buried in the cathedral. Not very good, is he, that one? You got King Alfred the Great. Pretty good King Alfred the Great, but the problem is you buried him in the cathedral. If you buried him under the car park, then you could have made something of that. No one's interested. A lot of the Ethels, King's Ethel, King Canute, C-N-U-T, that's how you spell it. Just he's here, so well done on that. Well done on your kings. I feel like there's something else I was going to say, but fuck it. Let's move on. So my guess, that's Winchester. Keep on wanting to call you Canterbury. I hope I haven't said it yet, but I keep on keep on wanting to say Canterbury. If I've said it, I'm sorry. I know where I am, I think. So my guest this week, he's probably best known just this week. He's probably best known. Come back next week if you can. He might be sold out next week as well. He's best known as a reporter on the Premier League show. That is why we're all here, to see his footballing. His footballing now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ahisha!
Hello, hello. Ahisha! Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of Canterbury. It's a real...
I don't know where I am by now. I'm into the tour.
Might I just say, it's such a pleasure to be on an openly pro-leper podcast. there are a lot of anti-leper podcasts and indeed sentiments in this world of ours.
Well, I'm kind of anti-leper. I'm kind of trying to cure leprosy. That's kind of, I'm anti-leprosy. If there are any lepers who are going, I like being a leper, bad luck, Richard Herring's here.
You're getting cured whether you like it or not.
Exactly, yeah. I am. Getting a bit close to Life of Brian territory there. So let's move on. I realise as we ad-lib. I'm surprised you did a show about being the Watford in the Premier League show. Was that you?
I went to a sort of local stadium. Did a thing about how we all enjoy the meltdowns that football managers have. Okay. And the reason that I did it was money.
Okay.
Tidy
it
life.
Was really fun, but yeah. It was just like, yeah, I'm not doing anything that day.
Sure. Are you a fan of football?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Good.
Cool.
And it's not just for money, it's for the love of doing it. So, now, look, you are here. Been doing stand-up comedy for a very long time.
Yes.
I saw an interview with you from 2003 in The Guardian when you were 17 years old, is that right?
No, I was 12 in 2003.
Were you 12 in 2003? Yeah.
No, I genuinely was born 2 years after you first trod
right,
his board.
Okay.
I'm desperately sorry about that. I don't know whether there was a correlation. I don't know whether my parents were in the audience and saw you and they were just like, we got to start trying.
Your mum was in the audience.
Yeah. That's the way.
I mean, look.
The thing is,
just add a bit of brown to this.
Take off
30 years.
You do look uncomfortably like my father if he'd been doused in bleach or something. I don't know.
Good. So what? You're like the Doogie Howser of stand-up, and that's a reference you're too young to understand. Yeah.
No, I mean, I know that that was a doctor, so I just assumed that that was a race thing. But yeah, so I did my first gig when I was 15, and I'm 28 now. One of my flatmates recently pointed out that I had been doing stand-up comedy as a hobby, but just for half of my life nearly. I was like, ah, that sounds about enough to stop. I should not do it now.
Yeah. Is there anything else you can do though?
No, this does become your only marketable skill after a while. It's not like I don't think I'm not going to fare well in the resource wars. when climate breakdown finally happens, it's not going to be like, does anyone want a zinger?
So when you were 15, were you doing the clubs? Because my wife, Katie Wilkins...
Yeah, we first met when I was a teenager, probably. Yeah, it would have been.
So you were doing, like, proper... You're going into clubs as a 15-year-old...
No, just doing, like, the open mic stuff at pubs in London and sort of sneaking. It just is my dad was always trying to get me to do odd extracurricular things with the hope that one of them would strike a passion.
Right.
And then this one did.
Okay.
And now I'm here.
Was he one of those dads who wrote some of your material for you? Because there was quite a lot of young stand-ups who had a sort of dad who wanted to be a stand-up who would write jokes for them.
No, mercifully not.
No, okay. And what kind of stuff were you doing when you were 15?
I can't remember and have no interest in finding out. Can you remember any stand-up that you were doing like when you were at uni or something?
I can remember I was doing comedy at 15 at school. I was doing sketch, but there wasn't really stand-up at that stage, certainly in Cheddar. But I don't think there's many stand-up clubs in Cheddar now. But everyone was sort of interested in doing sketch comedy in those days. So I did student review when I was 15 as well.
Right. In fact, I think I've heard you talk about this on Headmaster's Son.
Yes, I have. So I did a song called My Penis Can Sing. That was one of my first...
Yeah,
my first stand-up routines, we did a sketch about the mouse that lives in a windmill, where everyone was singing a mouse lives in a windmill in old Amsterdam, and then I saw a mouse, and everyone jumped up on their chair and went, "Where?" It was hilarious. It was brilliant.
So what passes for entertainment in Chester?
Yeah. Was anyone at that gig? Was anyone at the gig in 1988, Oxford Review?
Oh, this would be amazing.
No one. They're all dead, all those people. They probably are. It was like, it was very much the Oxford Review touring in 1988 had an audience of mainly about 60-year-olds thinking about it. So.
Yeah. Well, it's like...
very old man. Yes, I was...
It's like when I was doing footlights things at university and you would just be in front of a sea of octogenarians wondering why none of you were Stephen Fry. I'm desperately sorry about that.
And so you did stand up and then you went to university. And were you still doing stand up through university?
Then graduated and thought, well, let's give this a go for a little while.
So you've been doing stand up for about 8 years by the time you sort of came out of university, something like 6 or 7 years. So you must have been pretty good by the time you started out.
No, because what on earth do you have to talk about when you're that, like, it's like my penis couldn't even sing. So I'd seen no mice in windmills. Yeah. I'd barely seen a windmill, mate.
Yeah.
I had nothing to talk about. So I was just like structured showing off.
Yeah.
And still do.
It's sort of, I was talking about this to someone else. I forget. I've done so many of these stupid things. I forget which cunt it was. But... It's that kind of arrogance and confidence of that I must have had as well as a young person to think, yeah, I'm going to get up on stage. Yeah. Especially not when it's even at school or college, but like to go into the real world as a 21-year-old, yeah, I reckon I can entertain these adults with jobs.
I pretty much know how this life thing works now.
So it's incredible. You know, I don't think I would be able to do that. If I was starting now, I'd go, God, that's a really nerve-wracking thing to do.
Yeah. But that's what you've got to start doing things when you're massively delusional.
Did you get? Because I think even when I was doing, and I didn't start like professionally until I was in my 20s. Did audiences react well to you being so young, or was it difficult to get through that?
Well, you're kind of a novelty thing, yeah. Right? When you're properly young, and then just had to attempt to actually justify the fact that I was taking up everyone's time when who actually wants to. Listen to a 22-year-old blather on about the way that they see the world. I think relatively few people feel that way about a 28-year-old now. Particularly in Winchester.
Yeah. Any connection to Winchester in your life?
No, I don't think I've ever been to Winchester before. The only thing that I know about Winchester is that Nick Helm went to university in Winchester.
How did he?
Yeah, he used to, back when, because he was another person who started around the same time as I was doing all this. So when I was pulling in to the station, just remembered Nick in his big booming voice. We had two best mates when we were at Winchester University. We were single all 3 years. We called it Lose Chester. And that was an absolute banker for for old Helmy back in the day.
So, you grew up in Wembley. It's very difficult to find stuff out about you on the internet. It took me a while to find Wembley, as that's where you grew up.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a routine about more people from your school joining ISIS than going to Oxbridge.
Yeah, in one particular, yeah. Because the thing is, you're not allowed to apply to both at the same time, so okay. You've got to really make a strong choice. So we had one particularly let's call it not a vintage year where some of the chaps decided to ply their wares. It's a sort of a useful way of dispelling, because I realise that I sound as though I've been colonised by my own voice. went to the local comp in Wembley.
So did they all go to Syria, those guys?
Yeah.
I mean, is that, in a way, is it safer to go to Syria as a black or Asian person than go to Cambridge? In a way.
Well, I think it's taking the kill or be killed attitude a bit too far, really.
So how was Wembley? How was growing up in Wembley? I nearly moved to Wembley when we first moved to London. That was again...
Oh, really?
I was 1989. It was again before your time.
Yeah. Wembley, it's one of those sort of classic London suburbs where growing up just consists of utter tedium punctuated by meaningless, gigantic violence. that's kind of what most of London outside of Zone 2 is generally like. So you'll just be like, oh, God, I wish there was a shop. Oh, someone's dead. Cool.
And has Wembley gentrified in the last 20 years?
It's very patiently resisting
right.
Gentrification. I do remember a few years ago going to Preston Road, where my parents live, and a co-op had just opened on Preston Road near the station. I walked into the co-op because I needed to get something, and there was a young white family with a pram, and the speakers were playing Radiohead. And I was like, Radiohead, white family, co-op. My inheritance is going through the fucking roof right now. Really solid stuff. But it stagnated at that. That's as far as we've got. There was a Costa a little bit after that. And then the Costa caught fire. And no one's really done anything about that.
Is it still on fire? Just gently just burning?
Perpetually on fire. There's a constant effort to keep the shops either side of it from succumbing to the blaze. But Costa itself remains perpetually...
There's people warming themselves.
...the Promethean feature.
Terrific. So... So you did Edinburgh. You've done an Edinburgh show pretty much every year since 2011. I think every year since 2011.
Not I didn't do 2011, but I did 2010 and then 2012 and every year since. So eight of them now, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So how old were you in that? For 2010, you were...
So 2011 would have been the first one because I was 20 and then skipped 2012 and did 13 onwards.
Yes,
and in 2012, I did the Comedy Zone, which you may well have done.
I didn't do it. No, I was never asked.
Oh, okay. The thing is that Richard and I are signed to the same management. Do you know how hard it is to not be asked when you're a client?
Well, I didn't really. See, I did stand up for a couple of years right at the start, like 89 to 91. And then I didn't really like it. And so we started doing radio stuff and double act stuff. So I didn't really do the circuit. So I sort of avoided the Comedy Zone. My double act partner, who we may talk about later, did do the Comedy Zone, though. So you have that in contact. in common with him.
Well, you'll be pleased to know then that I believe that my year was the last year that it existed, so we ran it into the ground for you.
Thank you. When will Richard get a chance? I'll bring it back. I might bring it back. It was good. It was just like three or four acts, wasn't it, and doing 20 minutes each. It was a nice way to start doing Edinburgh. So your first show was called Astronomy, or Astrology.
Astrology was the first one. The second one was Astronomy, yeah.
And so 20 years old, how did it go down? Whereabouts were you on at that early stage?
I was in an underbelly room called the Wee Coo.
Okay.
And that was the first and only time that I did the proper paid fringe.
Oh, was it?
Because I was like, oh, right, probably it's not smart to lose loads of money unnecessarily.
Yeah. Probably not, like first year, but that's right, because I saw you, I guess, in 2017.
Yeah,
you were still a free fringe then, weren't you?
Yeah, which is very nice. I don't know if people know the way that the Edinburgh Festival works, but there are all sorts of different models whereby you can do it. So some things you just sort of get given the room for free and there are no overheads. You just do a collection at the end and the venue get the money from the fact that they're getting more people through the doors and they get the bar takings. And then there's another model whereby you are charged a lot to have the room. The audience are charged a lot for the pleasure of being in the room, and someone makes money and no one quite knows who they are. it's clearly worked out very well for some people.
I mean, mainly the Edinburgh landlords, I think. Yeah, certainly judging by this year's cost of my accommodation. So you start getting nominated for awards in 2016, was it?
Well, 17 and 18 were the ones that were nominated for the main award in Edinburgh. So the 17 one was the one that you came to.
It was, yes. And you lost out to two. I was actually interviewed you on the day before that it was announced.
Yeah.
I think I said it'd be impossible for both of you to win, but then actually two people did win in that year. Yeah. So you did very...
That's when John Robbins and Hannah Gadsby shared the thing. Yeah. And I'm calling it a solid bronze.
I think we can call John Robbins a silver with the way things turned out. I did say that to him this year myself. Right, I'm going to ask you.
One of the funniest moments of Edinburgh 2018 was John Robbins coming back to present the award for the best show and opening it with my co-winner Hannah Gadsby would have been here as well, but retirement has proved surprisingly time-consuming.
Her show was all about how she was going to quit comedy. But she has failed to do, having become the most successful comedian in the world. I'm gonna quit podcasting right after this one. You won't see me next week. Don't bother coming. Okay, I'm going to ask you some emergency questions. I want to ask you this emergency question, because you're a la-di-da intellectual.
Right.
If you... You could choose one item from any art gallery or museum in the world that you would own. You can take home and own, but it can be anything. It doesn't have to be something fancy. It can be anything from any museum, any art gallery. Which one item would you take from any of the world's museums and art galleries and keep?
Right. Okay. This is quite good. I'd have the sort of master key to. Yeah. Maybe what gallery do I particularly like? I should have the master key to the Tate Modern and be able to go around the entirety of it whenever I please.
Okay.
That's a trick. That means I can have anything. Basically, infinite wishes.
Yeah. Well, you'd be able to look at it. You wouldn't be able to, if you took it, I reckon there's probably some security.
Yeah, but I don't really want to take it away. It's all of this, this horrible stuff that they have with, these weird ports and stuff where you're technically not in any country for tax purposes, and super rich people just buy up loads of art and store it in those things so they're not subject to any tax jurisdiction and can just sit there and appreciate, and no one ever gets to look at it because it's just in a temperature-controlled place. And that doesn't seem like a kind thing to do to the world.
No,
so I'm not going to be like, I'm going to take the Mona Lisa and none of you cunts are allowed anywhere near it.
Well, it's weird. I was talking to my niece stayed over last night, and her landlord, she lives in Leeds. Leeds Museum or Art Gallery has a system where you're allowed to rent some of the works of art from the that aren't being used in the gallery, and she has a Matisse in her house at the moment. Now, it's a slightly damaged, very small cartoon sketch by Matisse, but it's still Matisse.
I also have a Matisse in my flat, but that's because comedy's been very good to me.
But that's still... So they've started doing... Art galleries have started... Because of me, I think, for asking that question to everyone. What do I think I want? I'd like to... What I would take now, I've changed my mind. It was one of the chess men from the Isle of Lewis, but now I want the giant pencil from the Keswick Pencil Museum, which is the second biggest pencil in the world. I don't want the biggest one. I want the second biggest pencil in my house. Yeah,
you're
I just want it in my house, but go second biggest pencil. Could have had the first, but went for the second.
The last museum that I went to in Leeds was have you been to the Royal Armouries?
No.
It's really good. If any of you go Leeds... go to the Royal Armouries. It's basically just like loads of like swords and armor and all that sort of thing. But it's fascinating because they do weaponry through the ages, and you've gone through all of these rooms being like, oh my God, those are such cool swords. And then you get to the end and there's a whole room that you have to go through about how knife crime's actually a really serious problem. And really bad. It's like, you've just spent the last 2 hours telling me that there is nothing cooler in the world than loads of knives. Like, this does not seem like the
Well, they're like
mixed messages in the Royal Army.
They like swords, but then knives, it's like an affront to the sword, isn't it? It's like a tiny sword. So when they decided to bring tiny swords out, we didn't like it anymore. We liked it when you had a fair chance.
It's so ungentlemanly.
It is. Have a big sword. You can see the other person's got one. Takes a while to lift it up. You got a chance to get something to defend yourself with. Yeah, they're good. It's good to see. Good to see they ruin their own museum.
The other one thing that I would recommend is do not go to the Leeds Armoury Museum during the school holidays, as I did, because there is a special room where you get to shoot a crossbow. If you have like £3, you get a few goes at shooting a crossbow. I was like, right, I will be spending £300 in this crossbow room to have as many goes on the crossbow as possible. But then I was the only person over 10 in the queue. it felt too embarrassing. So I've still never shot a crossbow.
You should be. You look like you're under 10. You can get away with it.
Did you see me really hastily shaving in the corner of
You could get away with it. I'll ask you a random emergency question.
Sure.
Then we'll be back to the proper questions. What do you think the fourth law of robotics should be? Do you know what the three laws of robotics are?
So it's what cannot harm a human.
Yeah.
Is that? And then the second one is something as long as it must do what a human tells it to, unless that conflicts with the first law.
Okay.
And the third is must preserve itself unless that conflicts with the first two.
Wow, that's pretty good. I don't know if that's right, but sounds good, isn't it?
Is that right? I think. Is that someone in here must know? Is that is about right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's action or inaction, the first one.
Action or inaction. Yeah, all right, clever dick.
I've got a lot of time for this guy.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the wheelhouse of my audience. This. I'm surprised everyone didn't go, yep. Oh, actually, it's in action or inaction. In unison.
Yeah. With my crowds, it's just like, does anyone have any antidepressants on them now? It's like, yeah.
My fourth law is you cannot have sex with a robot that you yourself have created. That should be the fourth one.
My fourth law will be I must have sex with any robot you have created.
Okay, that's fine. You make some and I'll make some and we can swap.
Yeah.
And then we get around that fourth. Do you think having sex with a robot should be considered cheating on your partner? Or do you think it's... I think it's okay. It's not cheating, is it? Okay.
This sounds like the question of a man who desperately needs validation. A decision he has already made.
My wife thinks it is cheating.
Right.
I mean, it was when I was watching Humans and I was talking about Gemma Chan. I said I would like I would like to have sex with a robot of Gemma. Not Gemma Chan. I wouldn't like to do that. I would like to have sex. That would be cheating on my wife. That would be it. But if there was an exact robot of the exact Gemma Chan that acted like Gemma Chan, I'd love to have sex with that. And it wouldn't be cheating.
Right.
Would it? Because of it not being real.
And to what extent do you need proof? Would it be enough if Gemma Chan were to say to you, Richard, I would like to have sex with you, and I am a robot, by the way?
Yes, that would be
and
enough.
And you just take it at face value. She said she was a robot.
If she said it in a voice like that, that's entrapment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because that was like a robot voice.
Robots can't lie. That's one of the laws.
Well, I think. Are you in a relationship?
I am not, no.
You're not? Oh. Well, you can have sex with any robot you want. Like, I envy you. Envy that freedom. My wife's stopping me doing it. They use vibrators, don't they? They're hypocrites, women. Yeah. They're hypocrites. Hypocrites. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. So, look, you have a vibrator, and yet the second I have sex with someone who says she's a robot, all of a sudden it's the double standard comes into play.
Exactly. So I'm a big fan of the MASH report, which you are working on.
Yes.
Both as a writer and as a reporter on the MASH report,
mm-hmm.
occasionally. How you're finding... It's quite a turbulent time. As we're recording this in October 2019, this is going to go out in sometime in 2020.
This will be released in two prime ministers' time.
It could well be. Oh, not that soon. It's not that soon. It must be a great time to be doing comedy, but also, like, because often you're writing something, you record it, and then the news has changed within the day.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like, I remember during the week two record, where I was doing a correspondence piece as well, and at the end of the record, when we all took our phones off airplane mode, like, oh, fuck, the Operation Yellowhammer report came out while we were doing this. And so just hastily wrote a bunch of things. Nish, maybe say this. And it was all very quickly moving. So it is a very interesting time to be doing it, but equally just sequestering yourself in a room with a few other people and just sitting in there all day, being constantly up to date with everything going on in the world is fucking horrible. I don't know if you've seen that. I don't read the news unless I'm working on something that requires me to read the news.
Yeah.
Because it's just really upsetting.
Yeah.
And I've got no interest in it. And it's like that lovely Bill Hicks bit from ages ago when he talked about... talked about, like, I don't know if you ever watched... 24-hour CNN for, like, 18 hours. And it's just, like, war, death, famine, war, death, famine. And you look out of the window and it's just, like, chirp, 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 chirp. And it's just, like, nice birds. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's better to focus on that bit.
It's true. I mean, I listened to the news on the way up as I was driving up here. In 20 minutes, if it was depressing enough today.
Yeah.
So, do you think, I mean, you know, it's you've sort of discussed this a little bit in your act, I think. I'm sure you have it. So you do a very political stand-up act. But
well,
do you feel
less so now? The last show that you saw was very political, but the last year.
But do you feel we're sliding towards fascism? I think I saw you talking about this at some point. But do you think we're?
Yeah, I mean, like that's sort of the. It's an odd thing to think about at the moment because you simultaneously don't want to be alarmist and definitely don't want to be underprepared.
Yeah,
and that's the position to be in at the moment. And I think it's quite an interesting one. In terms of, like, different communities and different people are having to have different conversations at the moment with their families and stuff. So just, like, trying to... I will occasionally sit down with my parents and work out, like, what the specifics of medical care would look like if my father, who is not a British citizen and refuses to become one, were denied access to the NHS. Then how would we go around doing that? Because that's, unfortunately, not an entirely unrealistic proposition.
Sure.
And it's weird, like, but I think that's always the case where sort of groups who end up being on the receiving end of whatever terrible stuff is going on, you do have to talk about it. And if you're not on the inside of it, then sometimes you don't know about that. And then that's also the case with lots of... I'm straight and I'm a man, and so there's loads of stuff that I don't know is going on and about conversations happening elsewhere. But yeah, it's just we're fucked. We're really catastrophically fucked.
Well, it was just this week was the Conservative conference, and Priti Patel was doing her.
Oh god! It is so thrilling that we have finally reached a stage where someone who looks like a member of my family can entirely fuck over my family. Really, this is what we've been aiming for with equality this entire time.
It kept cutting to the audience who looked like excited about her saying that there should be no immigrants, but also confused. Well, but she was.
It's a very exciting time for immigrant populations because we are doing increasingly well, and things are getting better for like financially for us and stuff like that. But it's just really sad to know that so many in our community still can't afford to buy a mirror.
The thing I noticed about it though, she kept on like really looking at the camera and smirking. It was like she was in Fleabag.
I will end. I think Tory conference Fleabag is: am I a massive asshole? Not do I have? It's just smiling at the camera while saying that we will end free movement once and for all. What? In what world does free movement sound bad? This is like, you know, that means us too, right?
Though I find her quite sexy. She's a bit like the Borg Queen. That's the thing. She's got that sort. When women get very right wing, I don't think there's much more right wing than the Borg Queen. That there's something that I turn for that. I would just think I'm quite excited by that. And that again, that can't count as cheating. They're bare. It's bare. If there's no humanity in someone. She's sexy though, Priti Patel, right? Because she's so evil.
I'm not doing this. Okay. Right.
You're single. You can go there. She won't like you because of your ethnicity, but it is. Maybe we can do a Serrano de Bergerac kind of thing where no. Good. So what do your current...
I would like to apologise on Richard's behalf, Katie.
I will never apologise for my feeling. If it's wrong to love a fascist...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I am wrong. So what's your current shows then? Is that you are will be touring hopefully when this is still going out?
Yes, so that's going
if
to
you're
be...
still in the country.
Yeah.
In 2020.
Yeah, that will be touring around the UK until the end of April 2020 or in Mumbai. Could be either. Don't know how it's going to go down. I've got the overseas citizenship, so I should be all right either way.
So tell us about this show.
Yes. So this show is sort of about certainty, about its presence, absence, necessity, utility, and everything like that. I was just thinking a lot about the different kinds of ways that you can have certainty, and particularly contrasting myself with my dad, who sort of has certainty in his relationship and his family and his religion and his politics. And for me, everything else, everything on all of those levels feels far more up in the air. So while he has a cast iron ideology, is married to the only woman he's ever been with, and thinks that when he dies, he's going to come back as a sparrow or some shit. Right. I'm a single atheist who votes Lib Dem out of a lack of imagination. Right. And, that's the position that I've ended up in. And so it was largely built around, I was writing one particular show until about halfway through the process when the relationship that I was in rather unexpectedly ended and then was broke for a while and then wrote another show, which was the one that ended up going to Edinburgh and being this one, which all sort of came together nicely in the end.
I mean, the world is so uncertain, I think. Again, for, you know, you are literally a millennial, aren't you? This is,
yeah.
You are one of these millennials we hear all about.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's...
One of those
I'm
ones we've
I'm not
got
quite
now.
A baby... I'm in between the baby boomers and the millennials.
Generation X,
I am. Yeah. So I don't know how much blame I take for for the baby boomers. I think I can just about get away. I can join either team, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and get in with the millennials.
Well, yes, in more ways than one. Yeah.
But yeah, it's because I mean I've seen you doing that routine about you know, the housing, the impossibility of getting on the housing ladder. Well, then being no ladder is a very funny routine, and you know, but it's changed so much. You know, when I moved to London in 1989, and you know, you could rent.
I moved there the next year.
Yeah. I didn't come in from the same route, though. Actually, I had been in that one. And, you know, you could...
It's always lovely to know that when you're a teenager and watching someone and looking up to them and following their work, that one day the two of you will be sat on stage in front of 400 people as colleagues and he will be telling you how he fucked your mum. Yeah. it's a real moment for me.
But I moved to London, I lived in a house with three other people and we paid £60 a week in rent each. Which was about half of my money that I earned from my first job. So I could afford some potatoes and wine from Rimpi's Food, Fags, Food, Non-Foods, Wines and Spirits. Rimpi's, it's on Horn Lane, I don't think it's there anymore in Acton.
Non-foods. Isn't... Everything in the universe contained within one of the criteria.
Yeah, they had everything. It was the shop that sold everything. You could buy a bottle of wine for £1.50 and that would do us. You could buy a potato, you could buy a non-food.
I could really go for a non-food.
I got on the housing ladder within about 10 years and it was, as someone not earning that much money...
Yeah.
Maybe £30,000 a year I was earning. I could get a deposit down on a flat. I mean, that's...
Yeah, that doesn't happen now.
That must suck when you hear that.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
What do you have to do as a millennial to get a house? If you just have someone has to die, you have to rob a bank?
Yeah, either you've got, like, fancy parents or you grew up in London and someone dies or something.
Yeah.
Or you end up... doing a job that's very well paid, but it doesn't sound like... It's just... the unsettling thing is always, like, the equivalence of the people who were in your position, say, 20 years ago, now would never be able to... And, like, for example, the fact that our family of four was supported by my mother's wage as a state primary school teacher in London, and that was fine, could never... The equivalent of her now could never do that.
No.
And that's... Firstly, that's a real problem in terms of the training and maintaining of key workers, and also just like a horrible human problem for where families
want to. But what do you do? I mean, with everything, with the climate, I mean, obviously it sort of is, things are happening and young people are starting to go, hold on, what the fuck? But with the climate and with you know, this inequality within, through the generations, what do you think the realistic options are? Because it seems to me like there's only one realistic option, and as a homeowner, I'm not behind it. That's an old man homeowner.
I don't know, because like even the one thing now that after the last few decades of policy can't be allowed to happen is a vast number of middle-class people being trapped in negative equity, because that is the only thing, like, that's seemingly for successive governments that has felt like the only, like, thing that can never be allowed to happen for the country's economy. So even if there were a Brexit-fueled reduction in house prices, we've now become so addicted to their constant inflation that I think everyone would just go spectacularly insane very quickly.
I just sort of feel, do you not feel that it's got to, something's got to break, right? And if Brexit happens, if it's happened for you at home, how is tell us.
Yeah.
If it's not, I bet it hasn't happened yet. But has it? There's no way of knowing.
I don't reckon it will happen.
I don't think it's happened yet. We'll see. But, you know, with all these people, I mean, seemingly Brexit being pushed through by people who just want to make lots of money on the pound being fucked. That seems like quite a short term, hooray, I've made loads of money in a desolate land where there's nothing to buy. Well, shit. I look at the Russian Revolution, which I was always quite obsessed with, but that's people getting to the point where the divide between rich and poor is so great that the rich people have no idea how they're flaunting their wealth, and how, you know, the richest people in pre-revolution Russia were just so ridiculously rich, and the poorest people were so ridiculously poor. And you just get to a point where surely just something implodes and that's the only way through it, isn't it? If the world's going to be destroyed unless we stop climate change, then the revolution's the only option, isn't it, for you?
Well, I don't think that things are quite as febrile as
well. That's 1917. What I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if the Remain people were going, we're going to pick up arms and fucking fight the shit out of you. If we leave the EU,
the problem is that both camps are dominated by people who are shit at fighting for different reasons.
Yeah, I know, but you know, I mean, I fancy Remain's chances against the elderly.
Oh yeah,
that's all I'm saying. Why are people worried about armed revolt?
Oh yeah, the riots are not going to happen.
No. That's a prediction. How is it in 2020?
I hear promised me this wouldn't happen.
Oh, it's dramatic irony. That's what it is for you people at home. Let's talk about, because I think there was, Stuart Lee mentioned you quite a few years ago in an article on...
In his book
as well, but I think it started as a little article that I found, where he accused you of stealing one of his trademark bits.
This is when I was 17 or 18 or something like that.
Yeah.
And the idea of going out into the audience.
That's his idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some pantomimes might have a word to say.
But, you know, it's behind me.
It seemed... it seemed weird because he could have not... He named you, right? It's sort of... And you were like a...
He
like
did, and then I took it up with him and he removed my name kept the rest of everything.
Okay. Because it's in the article I saw he named you, right? Which seems like a dick move.
It's an odd thing to do to a child, but there you are.
But you didn't... were you influenced by him?
Yeah, of course. I was interested in comedy and in that time period, and you couldn't not be. Yeah. I do think that he's made some incredible things to this day.
With a bit of help. But, you know, I think it's sort of weird because when we were... I knew him when he was 17 or 18, probably 18. And, yeah, we were both very influenced by other comedians. So it's, you know, and it's, you know, you could pick out the people he was influenced by. But did you... Was that a bit you... Because you were doing it in a gig you were on with him.
Yeah, and then I did a other gig. I did Political Animal in Edinburgh that summer after the book had been published and brought that up on stage.
Yeah.
It just sort of, that was that. And then there was a sort of like handshake and a, okay, fine.
Okay.
And it was done.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to slag him off a bit though? Yeah. I'll now do it for you. If you don't want to do it, I'll do it for you. There aren't many comedians he hasn't got some kind of beef with, to be honest, but maybe something to do with who you're represented by. So it's...
We all know why, Rich.
let's move on. We'll go on to an emergency question. Yeah. One day we'll talk about him properly. Not today. It's not today, my friends. When he's dead, it won't be long. Back for you at home. I won't edit it out, even if he is. So let's ask you some classic emergency questions.
Sure thing.
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock? I don't ask many people this.
Genuinely, I've never tried that.
I tried.
No.
Even once you'd heard me ask that question, I must give it a try now, Richard. What? Now I've heard Richard ask that question, I must.
Oh, I'll try later. Sure.
Okay, yeah, sure.
No, I've never been a particularly flexible man.
Okay.
So I think that the only person who I'm aware can do it is...
Yeah. Okay.
Stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Okay. I must get him on.
Yeah. So ask him. I don't know if that's a thing that everyone's supposed to know. But, yeah. Can suck his own dick,
right, okay.
But I've never heard of anyone else being able to do it. Okay. So I was just like, I'm probably not that exceptional.
I think can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You should get the two of them together.
Yeah. Good. Well, give it a go and let me know. Could you just
I'll take
a go
it and let me. Yeah.
Well, I'll just do it a little bit at the end. Ahisha cannot suck. Ahisha, just edit the one out. Ahisha. Okay, let's ask a more classic emergency question.
But I think that the point is, like, I've never been interested in the idea of sucking a cock.
Yeah, but you're
and
getting...
so I don't know why sucking my cock would be different.
You're looking at it from the wrong angle. You've got to just flip your mind round.
And just you're be like, oh my god, I'm getting a blowjob.
I hate my cock, sir.
But.
This is amazing.
This is one of the few questions that I'm not going to ask you back because I'm sure you have. But I'm sure you continue to try.
I'm surprised you haven't tried. That's all I'm saying. All right, have you ever seen a ghost?
No. Mm. That's one of the things that, like, I remember when I was a child, I always used to think that, like, my grandparents' house was haunted or something like that. And then in retrospect... I was just a child who was frightened because he was away from home, so it all felt a bit spookier.
That's when the ghosts come, though, when they know that. When they know you're in that vulnerable position, that's when they come. Okay.
Have you?
Yeah, they're good. I don't know, because they don't exist. Though I was talking, Nick Frost was on just recently for people at home, and. In his book, he tells this story about... And I was listening to the book, so maybe I misheard and it was a film or something he was watching. But I asked him if he'd ever seen a ghost, expecting him to tell this story where him and Simon Pegg went into a burnt-out house to look for where kids had died, and there were bells ringing, and he went into this room, and he saw... And they heard this bell constantly ringing, like a servant's bell, and they got into the room where it was ringing, and they looked, and they saw this charred child who then opened his eyes and looked at them. And when I asked him if he'd ever seen a ghost, he told a different story. I mean, it sounds like it couldn't be true, the thing that is in his book. So it might have been a dream or something, and he just started writing some of his dreams down in his autobiography. So that one's
He's just like, I don't talk about that.
Yeah, it's, well, he's written in his book, though, so It was quite scary.
To excise it, to exercise it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it. Well, you know, it's up to him. But
if anyone... I wouldn't bring it up on a comedy podcast if I had seen the burnt husk of a dead child.
It's really scary.
Gaze
it's really scary.
I'd be like, lads, you're not going to believe this one. Settle in, right?
I didn't pick him up on it because I was worried that the ghost would get me. It was scary. And let's do... I haven't asked this one for a long time. Would you... Because you're single, you can answer this question. I'm not going to rub it in. Would you... I wish I was single. Would you rather... wish I was 28 and single. Would you...
It's not bad, actually.
It's not bad, yeah. I bet it's good. I was 20...
robots these days.
Yeah, I was 28 and single. It was terrible. Would you rather date a man who is a 6 foot tall penis...
Hold on, wait. So he is a 6 foot tall.
Yeah, it's just
as if that's all there is.
They're all there is. He might have some balls at the bottom that he sort of shuffles along on. He's got a face on the helmet bit, and he might I think he would put just out of politeness to society, he'd wear a sort of jacket with false arms on it, like rod arms. But he wouldn't be able to use the arms. Unless he got mechanical arms, which he might do.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just like a hole on top of his head that stuff can come out. I think he would have to eat. He'd have to somehow ingest food through there.
Yeah.
Or a man who, instead of having a penis, has a tiny man there instead.
But the thing is, I'm dating. But this could be a celibate relationship. I'm not necessarily.
Well, I think you know.
Expected to.
Well, yeah, it'd be difficult to.
Yeah, I'm not expected to do anything with either.
But if I was dating the 6 foot tall penis man, I'd wank him off a bit.
Yeah,
just out of pity, because he couldn't. He's got no arms. Those arms are just hanging.
I would date the guy who had another guy instead of a dick because then we could go out and about and it'd just be normal. No one would be like, why is there a 6 foot tall dick on the central line hanging out? And then when we got back, get into bed, take off our clothes, there's another chap there to have a discussion with. Three friends. Okay. Lovely.
Good.
Makes sense.
Good to know.
Got someone to mediate in arguments?
Yeah. But if you did have sex with the guy, you'd have to have the other guy put up you. You'd be happy with that?
I don't think he'd be happy with that.
You'd have to have scuba diving equipment.
I don't think
appendage
man, like, I think I would very much be the top in that scenario. Okay.
I think that says a lot about you, that answer. And I
feel I don't want to make... A dick-sized man go in my ass. Yeah.
That and the fact that you were embarrassed to be seen out with the penis man, who's just he's probably got a nice personality, and you've judged him. He can't help being born that way. You dated him. You went on a date with him. And then you could have just said, "I'm not going on a date with you, mate. I've got a prejudice against penis men."
It's the last socially acceptable prejudice. To be prejudiced against a 6 foot tall dick.
On a similar note,
this
is a question I asked more rarely in the past. Would you rather date a woman who is a 6 foot vulva or a woman who, instead of having genitalia, has another woman living in a burrow between her legs? I mean, that sounds like that woman could just pop out anytime she wants and runs around. She's not even like a dad. She's just like a marsupial. Which of those would you like? I can guess from you with your prejudice against 6 foot tall genitals.
I'm going to continue that prejudice now.
That's what I thought. Right, good. Well, we're having too much fun. And I'm keeping we started a bit late, didn't we? We've got a bit of time. So one of your shows was about, I didn't know this about you, you were in Paris during the terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
So how much in Paris? Were you caught up in that or just in the...
So this was the 2016 show, so this was in November 2015, and I had been performing in Paris that night at a place called the Panam Art Café, Rue de la Fontaine au Roi, and there was one of the restaurants that was getting shot up was a couple of doors down, so I'd just come off stage, and like loads of armed riot police came in and sort of evacuated us down a side street so that they could run towards the shooting, which is the bravest thing I've ever seen and braver than anything that I'll ever do, I think, and in many ways hope. And, yeah, just heard lots of guns and know what that sounds like. I made it funny in the end. But, yeah, but no, the difficult thing was my girlfriend at the time, who not the one who the relationship ended earlier this year, but... was at the time getting the Eurostar from London to Paris, and she and I were trying to find one another in the midst of this, and there were retrospectively turned out like three separate massacres going on through the path that we had to take to get to be with one another again, and that was not ideal.
Yeah.
Suboptimal.
Yeah.
I'd call it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there could have been worse.
But yes, it could have been worse. That's true.
Because I often wonder how I would react in that situation. Mm. Obviously, you sort of think, you like to think you would be super heroic, but I'm pretty sure I would be super chicken.
Yeah, I mean, there's a limited amount of heroism that one can do when one is unarmed and unarmored and everyone else has machine guns.
Yeah.
Although my then partner Victoria did do a very heroic thing of she tended to someone who had been shot in the sort of took them into the apartment of the hallway of an apartment building and administered first aid and fed them Percy pigs. they were non fatally shot. They'd been shot through the wrist, but so she looked after them for a while until sort of more qualified help was able to come.
Yeah, and how do you go about... A, at what point do you think during that there might be some comedy in this? Because the comedians have, like, a weird thing where if something bad is happening, there's a part of them going, but this is good for my comedy. I don't think this situation would be one of them, because I think when you think you might actually die,
yeah, thinking, those
that's
going to
be bad.
Like, yeah.
That's bad for my comedy if I am dead.
But well, what great for the retrospective assessment of the art, I think. Like, you know,
but at what point did you think there was a show in that, and how did you go about turning
it's
that
it's not that there was a whole show in it. That was the sort of one that I ended the 2016 show with, because that show was very much that I thought of that and the 2017 one as two halves of the same thing, where in 2016 I was saying that it felt like the world was on the precipice of sort of much brighter future or a resurgent, much darker past, and that we were tiptoeing this tightrope between the two of them, and I couldn't foretell which way we were going to fall. And then in 2017, after everything that happened subsequently with sort of Trump in the US and everything that's happened here, I was like, right, I think I know which way we've fallen now. that was the thing of, like, remember... the fact that I felt so optimistic going into Gare du Nord and realizing that I looked just as much like a Frenchman as anyone else who was hanging around, and that we could all be part of something where you can just travel over, like get a train over to a country that historically there have been wars against hundreds of years ago and everything like that, but now just wander over and, oh, I'm going to make people laugh. What a nice thing to be able to do. And there, like, felt a real sense of optimism that was then just punctured by this sort of resurgent medieval violence that was seeking to reassert itself in this horrid way. And that was and so it was just trying to still find the whether there could be any optimism in there, and thinking that the optimism may come from taking care of people and Percy pigs.
Yeah, I do. No, I thought it was going to be a proper round of applause. It happens sometimes, doesn't it? but if there is something positive to be taken out of it, both of these extremes, which are sort of feeding each other, obviously, the right-wing politics and the terrorism sort of have a lot of similarities in their view. They're looking at the world and their enemies. And
if you start revealing that you also want to fuck Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, that's going to be a...
I'd give it a go. But do you think they're the sort of death throes, in a way, are they the death throes of something past? So the things become violent and things become extreme because they're actually, you know, I hope that whatever happens here, that the next generation are going to sort of eventually turn it around in the other direction again.
Well, I think that part of the problem is that, so there's that fascinating Gramsci quote of the old is dead, the new cannot be born, and in the interregnum many morbid symptoms will appear. And I remember reading that for the first time and thinking, God, yeah, that's exactly what this is. This is the interregnum where the morbid symptoms will appear because the new cannot be born. And then I thought, with the exception of like 3 years in human history, everyone has always thought that they were in the interregnum with the morbid symptoms.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that there is any sort of like a teleological march to progress or anything like that. It's all just like chaos and trying the best that you can.
Yeah. I think that certainly historically that is true. Ebbs and flows and back and forth and enlightenment followed by the Dark Ages. And that there's no reason why that can't happen again. But I also do wonder whether, you know, I don't see how sustainable any of the, you know, what is going on with Brexit. I don't see how sustainable it is from the point of view of the people who are pushing it through, because they're going to push it through and then it's all going to fall apart. And however much they keep blaming other people, which seems to be the politician's way through now, is not me, I'm great, everyone else is terrible. It's the sort of Stuart Lee defence. Yeah. You know, eventually people are going to go, oh, no, mate, it can't be right all the time. It must be you. Oh, actually, it's all you. You fuck this up.
Well, then people also have to take individual responsibility, and then that's never going to happen. Like, I think there are just lots of people who want there to be a revolution so that it may be betrayed and they can cry betrayal as a result. I think that that's all people like Nigel Farage have ever really wanted.
Yeah. But you think,
and it'll work.
Yeah.
Is the most annoying bit.
I think it worked, but I think these things work for a bit and then they get overturned, you know. I think if you keep pushing things to the extreme, it gets...
I hope you're right.
Me too. Don't matter for me, I'll be dead by then. Yeah. But it's, I played it exactly right. 1967 to 2022, the golden years, then... I'm out of here.
Yeah. Whereas I was born during what people called the end of history and will die at the actual end of history.
Though you could be immortal. Your generation could be immortal.
Oh, that'd suck. Yeah. More of this.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's... I had to, like, I washed my bedding earlier today and just had to, like, you know, just tucking everything around and doing it, like, forever. That forever.
Yeah.
Unless we can invent a machine that gets that means that you don't have to do the duvet shuffle.
I reckon you can, and then you can probably fuck it. It's right by the bed. Just need to put it
I want
to
live
back.
Forever. I now want to live forever.
We've made the bed. Let's mess it up again. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of this delightful podcast. We've covered a lot of stuff. It's very good. I've got to talk about, you've been in catastrophe acting.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, and campus a bit more.
Yeah.
Any more plans? There's a very good, you must check it out, little sketch you did about... the Brexit sketch, where your in-laws voted Brexit.
Yeah, that me and Freya Parker did together. Freya Parker, who's in the comedy group Lazy Susan and is a very talented comic and writer and actor. We did one of me and her just frantically trying to get out of a conversation with her leave voting parents, where at the end of it, it turned out that they were just entirely reasonable and normal people.
Yeah.
which I feel is the way that lots of discussions would actually go if we ever bothered to have them.
But it's nice. It's lovely. So are you planning to do more acting, or is it just...
I'm really bad at it.
You're not very... You're good.
I'm not really good at it.
No.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
Do you not feel like you don't really want to do things unless you feel as though you're going to be really
good?
Well,
I think the thing with acting is you don't have to, you know, nowadays you just do you have to do one thing. That's what actors are now. They just do one thing and then the same thing in the next thing they do. You could do one thing.
I could do one
thing. You can do this.
Yeah. Cool. I've been acting this whole time. I am actually John Kearns.
He isn't here yet, so you might be.
Yeah. Also, were they supposed to know that? Fuck.
Yes, fine.
All right.
That's next week, anyway. It'd be weird if he was here now, because...
Do you know what? John is one of the most hardworking men in the business. He turns up to the venue a week before he's required.
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. So your show is called... This year's called...
Dots. Yes. Ahir Shah Dots coming to town near you. Yeah. Maybe, depending on where this goes out.
And are you planning to be back at the Fringe again with a new show for 2020?
Not next year.
What?
Yeah. I think that I might instead do something that isn't mentally ruinous.
Okay.
which I think too few of us do.
Yes, it's good. Well, I think when you've done... You know, I did a lot in a row.
Yeah.
I've stopped doing stand-up for, some people would say 30 years, but for, I did a bit before the show, and people might still say that. I haven't really done any stand-up for like a year and a half, apart from the bits I do at the beginning of this, which is me just dicking around. It's been quite nice not to, I thought I'd really miss it, and I actually taken a bit of time away. I think it's quite good.
Yeah.
Unless you're burning with something that's...
Yeah. I think that sometimes you need to take a break from something in order to remind yourself how much you love it. And Katie, that's why Richard has been having an affair with a robot.
The robot looks exactly like my wife. That's so it's fine. But just her when she was younger. So it's... Could anything be more romantic than that? So... What a compliment to her that is, when you think about it. My wife's nearly the age I was when I met her now. That's how long we've been together.
Is Katie closer in age to me than you?
How old are you?
28.
Yep. So, go and see Ahir's very fantastic stand-up. We'll edit a lot of this out. She doesn't usually get to the end of one. We might get away with it. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause, Ahir Shah! We'll be back next week. James Foley, bring it around.
You have been listening to Rahulastapar with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, Ahir Shah. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, delightful venue that I loved playing. Thank you to everyone at Go Past the Stripe as well. I'm indebted to my producer, Ed Morrish, in this instance. I'm also indebted, of course, as always, to Ben Walker, my executive producer, and that's how he wanted to say executive producer, is Paul Rushy Rush. His nickname is Rushy. I don't know how they came up with that nickname for him, but it's good because he rushed his way through executive producing this episode and did a fantastic half-assed job. Well done, Paul. This is a Fuzz Go Faster Stripe.com and Sky Potato production. Why not head to rahulastapar.co.uk to find out more? Or go to gofasterstripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger, get all kinds of extras, including backstage interviews, my stand-up shows on download. Lots of things. I can't even think what. You can get in a monthly draw, you get emails, you get ad-free versions of the podcast. It's great. Do it. Become a badger. You won't regret it. You get a secret code and everything. Anyway, see you next time on Rahulastapar.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.